Wow. Well, it's another show coming at you, Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, the December 29th, 2019 edition. The last show of the, 2019 anyway, maybe the decade, depending on how you want to calculate it. Going to have stuff from out of town, stuff, local reports from the California Homeless Union, bits and snatches as usual, and probably a substantial flashback, which may not tell you much, but if you want to learn more, give me an email at rnorris3@hotmail.com in case you're not receiving the twice-a-week summary of the shows that I usually put out right before the show or just as the show is beginning to show up on the net. You find the same summary online on the Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom website. That's huffsantacruz.org. In case you have any trouble following this as it's being presented to you on the audio here, you can give me a call at 423-4833 and I'll walk you through how to get to the website, but it's not that hard, huffsantacruz.org. And then go to the name of the show, Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. You can find the audios of the show under latest and last shows, or last and latest shows, one of the lost and latest shows, sorry. You can also get the descriptions of the shows, which, as I said, you can get actually emailed to you before the show gets put out or just as it's beginning, assuming that I'm able to catch up with myself and get these things out in time, which I usually am, but not always. So let's hear a little of Utah Phillips, a new possible theme song, or who knows, maybe it'll just be a variety of theme songs for a while, but if you like it, let me know about it, rnorris3@hotmail.com. If you don't, let me know about that too. And plus, if you have suggestions on appropriate theme song music having to do with homeless folks, hobos, activist people, revolutionaries of one sort or another. I kind of jump up and down or back and forth between, as well as going up and down, between different groups. Let's listen in to this one. It's called Starlight on the Rails.
I can hear the whistle blowing, high and lonesome as can be. Outside, the rain is softly falling. Tonight, it's falling just for me. Looking back along the road I've traveled, all the miles could tell a million tales. Each year is like some rolling freight train, and cold as starlight on the rails. I think about a wife and family, a home and all the things it means. The black smoke trailing out behind me is like a string of broken dreams. Looking back along the road I've traveled, all the miles could tell a million tales. Each year is like some rolling freight train, and cold as starlight on the rail. A man who lives out on the highway is like a clock that can't tell time. A man who spends his life just rambling is like a song without a rhyme. Looking back along the road I've traveled, all the miles could tell a million tales. Each year is like some rolling freight train, and cold as starlight on the rails.
I'm on the line here on, it's December 28th in the afternoon with Andrea Henson, who's just what is your role in the Where Do We Go encampment?
So I'm the lead organizer at the encampment, and we're starting to incorporate the Seabreeze encampment, the I-80 University underpass, the Shell Mound encampment, as well as Gilman.
So
in Berkeley, basically that means all of the Caltrans parcels.
Well, it sounds like things have grown since we last talked to maybe a month or two ago when you didn't mention there was a variety of encampments. I think there were two that you were mentioning, and they didn't have separate names.
Yes, so we did have two encampments, which was the Seabreeze and the I-80 University Underpass.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the focus of the removal was. But now, as we've started our GoFundMe and raised funds, and as Berkeley has continued to evict people from downtown Berkeley, and the fact that it's wintertime, more and more people are moving under the freeways for shelter. And so, of course, they're a part of our family. We've moved out to these areas, and we're trying to make sure that they have tents and that they're prepared for the winter. That's really what we've been doing this past few months.
Now, these folks are pretty much under the same segment of freeway?
They're under the I-80 underpass, which is the area that we actually refuse to move from, the Seabreeze, and then the other two encampments are on Caltrans land as well.
Mm-hmm. And Caltrans is threatening to return in force in January.
Yes. So we are getting prepared for that, talking to the city. I'm actually quite impressed with Caltrans, despite what they're doing, because they've reached out to us, they've spoken to residents, they've called a meeting with CHP and County of Alameda and Rashi Krishnawani, who is District 1 representative, and Cheryl Davila. A lot of folks. The only person who did not come was our mayor, who was invited, and his staff.
That's Mayor Jesse, I'm so progressive, Arguin?
Yes. So he has not shown up. However, we are working with the city of Berkeley. Hopefully by the new year, we will have, according to Paul Butenhagen, who is the assistant city manager, garbage pickup at each of these sites.
So it is really in Santa Cruz, of course, and I suspect in Berkeley as well, you can clarify, the city manager, who is the real nuts and bolts power figure, who he stays while these council members cycle in and out.
Yes, it's the same here as well. So we're really going to have a fight on our hands if Berkeley doesn't move a little faster to find a place for us, a lawful place. Now, we had one eviction with Caltrans where we moved off the corner of Hearst. It's approximately 8 camps. And we did that as a olive branch that we worked with Caltrans because the business owners in the area wanted folks moved off of that corner and put up wrought iron fences. But that's our last move. We moved off the corner. We didn't call an activist. Actually, we did the move with a U-Haul, so people didn't lose their stuff. We were able to move the seniors upstairs. We packed up their things. So it was a different type of move. It was terrible. Nevertheless, I don't want to make it seem like it was something better. It was not. But at least we showed Caltrans that we could do this in a more humane way.
How far did you move, and how many people did you move?
We probably moved approximately 8 to 10 people. We moved them. They were underneath the I-80 underpass at the very end, the corner of Hearst. So most of them dispersed to two locations, further down under the I-80 underpass, as well as upstairs at the Seabreeze. So if you come to Berkeley and you look at these encampments, they're definitely much more populated now than ever before. And that's what we're trying to work with the city to get services out there. And because there's nowhere to go. You can't go into the city of Berkeley right now without being within a 3x3 space. It's just not feasible. So we're also organizing a pop-up outreach to bring service providers out there. I'm talking to service providers to bring a concentration out there so we could start getting this moving.
You're talking about, by the 3x3, you're referring to Berkeley's latest anti-homeless ordinances, which say if you have more than a 3x3 foot set area in which you have your possessions, we start taking them away from you.
That's right. That's correct. So you could really only have maybe a two-person tent that you can carry with you. You have to take it down every morning, put it back up. We had one gentleman who actually you know, he's an elder, and he had bypass surgery. It was just too much on him to be, you know, doing this type of work. And so we're really trying hard to get the services out to folks.
Mm-hmm. So how many people in total are now covered by the group of encampments that you itemized at the beginning of our discussion here?
It's gone up to at least 100.
And what percentage of the homeless population do you estimate this covers in Berkeley for those who are actually outside and not, let's say, in vehicles or couch surfing or sometimes making their way into shelter space?
Less than a quarter.
And is there much connection with encampments and individuals outside the group of 100 that you're now working with?
I don't understand the question. What exactly?
In other words, everyone is facing the same kind of harassment in one way or another. Is there much sense of solidarity, communication, connection, information exchange, back and forth? I don't know. Wobbly style street meetings. One could be fantasize that sort of thing.
Well, I think within our community, we really have a sense of community. So a lot of these folks know one another, especially throughout the encampment. So we do have that sense of solidarity throughout the four, and that's really. It's hard because it's a lot of folks to be able to tend to everyone's needs across all of the encampments. But now I'm trying to because, for example, the Ashby Shell Mound encampment, when the rains came, they were so just devastated by the rains. They were living under just rags of tarps. And so I try my best to get to all of these encampments. And each of these individuals, they'll let me know who needs help and who needs a tent and who do we need to get a tarp for, who needs medical care. And then I try to talk to the providers in Berkeley to provide those services to get us through the winter.
Mm-hmm. Do you have much phone connection on a regular basis with these separate encampments?
No, you know, phones come and go, so it's difficult. However, we do have a group. What's worked really well for us is to have a group on Facebook and on Messenger, and so we're able at various times to get messages out to the various encampments that way. People sort of, as their service gets turned on or turned off, they're able to check that. So that's typically how we send out. That's the best way I find to get the most coverage in terms of messaging.
Any connection with the Oakland encampments?
I am working with Wood Street. So
tell me what Wood Street is.
Wood Street is near Emeryville. It's a huge encampment. It's been there for over 5 years. There are people in structures. There are people, the majority were in RVs. There's about four jurisdictions. It's a complicated encampment, but it reminds me very much of the Seabreeze and the I-80 University underpass in that those encampments were neglected for a very long time. And I would say Wood Street is one of those types of encampments, but it's on the edge. People who've been through a lot of different encampments sort of end up there and were left alone. However, the city now is evicting people from the middle of that encampment, and that's very difficult because they don't have a place to be. I mean, the city thinks people can just move, and it's not that easy when you don't have first and last month's rent or a working vehicle, which provides a lot of structure and safety for you. So I'm working with that encampment. They also have a very good organizer, Dayton, who is the main person over there, but I'm working with them as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you can, when we end this, if you want to give me phone contact with Dayton, if he has phone, I'll try to get a report from him as well and put it out if you think that's a good idea.
I think that's fantastic. They actually, I believe it was Christmas Eve, went to Mayor Libby Schaaf's home with a list of demands. And asked her, you know, could she provide a lawful place for them to be? So absolutely, I think he would be great to talk to have a different perspective of what's going on in Oakland. And I have to say, Oakland is far ahead of Berkeley, surprisingly. At Wood Street, they're demanding more porta-potties, you know, more electricity, more hand-washing stations, those kinds of things. In Berkeley, we don't even have that. We've provided the porta potties through our GoFundMe. The city of Berkeley has not provided porta potties. Not saying that Oakland's, you know, any better, but it is different. We're facing a very dire situation in Berkeley because we don't have hand washing stations. The city hasn't put out any sort of services like that where they're providing porta potties. I mean, we are, like I said, I am grateful that we're going to get trash pickup service at all of the encampments. That's a huge plus for us, but we have a long way to go.
Well, I know here in Santa Cruz, you have a similar situation. We actually have encampments being broken up if they're more than, I don't know, 7 or 8 people together. They're just swept away by other sheriffs in the county or the police in the city. And there's no large encampment as there was last winter at the Ross Camp or the winter before here at the San Lorenzo Benchlands campground, where actually the police department directed people kind of on the quiet to go there and lay low. Now they're not even doing that, even though you have apparently, I don't know if it's true in Berkeley, but significant amounts of federal and state money rolling into the pockets of the poverty pimps, as I call them, or the service providers, as they like to call themselves. And not much of it is reaching homeless people directly, except for small numbers, and then, of course, a lot of employees, consultants, yada, yada, yada. Is that a problem for you in Berkeley?
In fact, KPIX here in the Bay Area did a two-part expose on BAC, which is the Bay Area Community Services that provides most of the housing services to the homeless and those facing homelessness. And just the issues involved with that, people have so many complaints. And Berkeley, for example, gives $22 million to homeless services, and it's very difficult to find anyone to help. We're now starting to see an increase in terms of Berkeley Mental Health. They're doing a great job to try to do outreach. But you're absolutely correct. There's a lot of money going to a lot of providers, and we're just not seeing that assistance getting to the people on the ground who really need it, who are actually homeless. A lot of this money gets focused and detoured toward deterring displacement. But then once you're out on the street, it's so difficult to get back into housing.
How many people are in the Emeryville encampment that you mentioned before?
That runs anywhere from 12 to 15. That's a smaller encampment, but about 12 to 15 over there.
And just kind of to look back historically, you're probably familiar with the years ago when there was the Albany Bulb encampment, which was artists living out there and until they were dispersed, bribed, and threatened away from where they were living. Is there any kind of... there's nobody out there now, I take it.
No, Albany, and that's something that's very interesting, people who don't know their history, so I really respect you for knowing that, bringing that up. I've been to city council meetings where city council members in Berkeley will say, well, why can't we be like Albany? Albany doesn't have any trash, and they have no homeless, and they don't realize that Albany chased all of the homeless out for years and years. They would tell them to go to the landfill, and they did, and stayed there and had a very well-run encampment, and then they moved them all out. And now a lot of those folks have been displaced and have run through these services and not, I call them service failed, not service resistant, but the services have failed them. So a lot of the folks from the Albany Bulb actually are living at the Sea Breeze or living at the I-80 underpass or living at Ashby Shell Mound and are also living at Wood Street in Oakland. And under Gilman. So these are a lot of the same folks who've been in the movies on YouTube about the Bulb, A Bump's Paradise and several that talked about the success at the Bulb. A lot of those folks now are back out on the street and have no services. It's very, very sad because, like I said, these are service-failed folks.
Mm-hmm. Do you have more people helping you than you did 3 months ago?
Somewhat. We do have a lot of support. Right now, it's basically OSHA and I, Barbara Brust, always doing a magnificent job in the community throughout Berkeley. We have a lot of support for when evictions come up, and so I'm going to start gearing up to ask people to support us with this next eviction. I think we're definitely getting a lot more support within the city government. Like I said, Paul Butenhagen has just been amazing, Cheryl Davila.
And who is Paul Butenhagen?
He's the assistant. He's the assistant city manager.
Ah, yes, that's right. That's
so
what you're saying.
He's the one who's working with us on actually. We just had a meeting right before Christmas, he and I, about trash pickup at all of the encampments. We have a dumpster now at the Seabreeze. We're working to get those dumpsters placed closer so people don't have to go so far. We're also going to work together on vector controls to help manage the rodent problem because of all the illegal dumping and all of the food that's being dispersed. So I definitely would say that we're getting more momentum within the city. I think the true test, Robert, will be in a few weeks when Caltrans posts, what will City of Berkeley do? Because we've told them for 3 months, Caltrans has told them, we've met with, like I said, the county of Alameda. Everyone is talking to the city, to the mayor's office, and they don't have an, they haven't responded to us. In fact, the mayor's office has not responded at all to the open letter that we wrote from the encampment. Caltrans did. Tony Tavares, the director of District 4, did respond to us. He spoke to the residents. They've been reaching out, and so they're trying to do something different. Is it perfect? No, but at least they're trying. They're talking to the residents. The mayor has not.
Was there any kind of representation from the groups that you're working with in the Oakland protest that happened outside Oakland City Hall that was dispersed by force by police, what, 3 or 4 weeks ago?
The folks from Berkeley that were there were from, I know, the Here There encampment, and many of our activists were involved, and some got arrested. I know Barbara Brust helped with that. I went and visited and brought some supplies, but at that time, I know that my camp, we were not actively engaged because I was here preparing for the winter. Our folks are in mud, and a lot of them are not under the freeway, and we have elders. So we have so far now with our GoFundMe raised over $8,000. At that time, I was handing out tents. We've given out over 80 tents, and these are 10-person, 7 to 10-person tents so that people can stand up and have a feeling of, you know, home. This is my home. It's helped people leave domestic violence situations. We also provided, I think, 40 or 50, I've lost count, but so many large tarps. And if you know, a heavy-duty 10-mil tarp is very expensive. So we were able to get those out to folks. We provided hand warmers, almost 400 space blankets, because those help with insulating tents. So we really, my goal, and I feel horrible about that, but I was supporting them, was really focusing on our encampments and making sure that we were prepared for the winter, because our fight is coming in January if we don't get services, if we don't get some sort of decision on where we can be. So that's what I focused on. But I was so amazed at Nita B and the East Oakland Collective and how they went and put tents down at City Hall in Oakland. I thought that was amazing, as well as the women now who took over, the moms who took over the vacant house. We're all fighting the battle across the state, Sacramento, Santa Cruz, right, Redding. We're all having the same issues, you know, and preparing for the winter at the same time. Like with us, where the folks are out digging trenches. They need shovels. I've given out 2 propane heaters for the tents. We need more of those. People are getting burns from building fires, and we're not supposed to be, but when it's freezing, if you've been outside in the winter, it's horrible. You have to do something. My focus has been that during that time.
Well, you know, I guess it was either this morning or yesterday, another homeless elder died out in the cold. I don't know if it was because he was drinking or because it was, you know, unattended medical or just exposure. This makes, I think, this year the latest, the count of the homeless folks, and it's a little hard to tell because they're confused in their figures, but in Santa Cruz County area, it's at least... We're counting them at the Union of the Homeless. Stats are like 87, 88 now, which is almost doubled from last year, which is an amazing statistic, which we can't, you know, I can't quite fathom it. I mean, we've seen things go up significantly at different years, but this is a big one. And of course, the city this year in Santa Cruz has no winter shelter to speak of, which is because instead they're throwing all their money into a year-long programs and They've changed the name of their homeless services center to the Housing Matters. We like to call it Housing Mutters because, of course, there's no housing to send people to. It's, you know, it's a way of chattering away while the winter passes and people, I guess, you know, they either leave, die, or, I don't know, get assimilated somewhere else. It just they hide from the police or the police force them away. Here, their encampment, which is part of the, you know, first they came for the homeless encampment complex, which you mentioned earlier, has a policy of no hard drug use, whereas there's significant hard drug use among adults outside who are, you know, who are homeless, and
right.
Why the hell not, considering the circumstances? Not that it's a good thing to do, but the idea that you know, we're only going to be accepting of those people who follow this particular get clean first rule. There's the same kind of problem, I think, that you have with the Housing Now model, which is, and the Housing First model, which is, you know, the idea is you give someone a place to live and, you know, they can get better in some way.
Right.
But, I mean, what's the story at the encampments you work with? Is it a matter of are people told you can't come to the encampment if you're a hard drug user, or you have to do it privately, or is it what's the process procedure? What are the rules there, if any?
Well, it is self. It is self-governed. There are leaders there and folks who manage behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And really, the only behavior that is disapproved of is, you know, violence or creating some kind of a scene.
Theft, perhaps.
When I came in, a lot of homeless activists and others, when we started the Where Do We Go movement, came in and automatically wanted us to separate people.
Mm-hmm.
And we are very adamant, and I say we because these are my friends and my, you know, we've become a community, and they had their rules. But Ocean Newman, as well as myself, have always believed that there is no division and no judgment. We meet people right where they are. And at the Seabreeze and at the I-80 encampments and a lot of the Caltrans encampments, not just in Berkeley but throughout the state, there is not a division. Everyone takes care of everyone else. And I have to say that especially at our encampment, it's sort of the end of the line. The Seabreeze and the I-80 have housed service failed. People who have mental illness, who've been abused, who've been battered and beaten, can come there and the community will help take care of them. We have folks who have not been able to get services where the community will look out for them. People who have PTSD, for example. It's not just drug use that a lot of these sanctioned encampments will kick people out for, but disruptive behavior. When I say disruptive, I mean, like, for example, we have people so traumatized that all through the night they're screaming with nightmares. You might be put out of a shelter for that, but this is a place where the community has embraced them, where they can come, and we all know who's yelling at night. We all know who has certain demons, and everyone is accepted. And that's where I am and where I like to be. The same thing at Wood Street in Oakland. I passed the bar in July, California. So
congratulations.
And when I practiced law, and this is going to be all of my clients, I told everyone at the encampment, we have two attorneys now, Ocean Newman and myself. What we pride ourselves in is we meet people right where they're at, whatever it is, and we help them. And that's what I love about our encampments. And we've told activists and others who've tried to come into these encampments and say, well, we want to remove the drug users, or we want to remove the people who are mentally ill, or we want to remove whatever label they want to place. If they say, well, if you don't do that, I've had people tell me, if you don't remove them, we're not going to help you. And I'll say, then you don't have to help us. We're very competent, and actually I find that this particular group is the most compassionate, and they want housing. They don't want a sanctioned encampment. These are people who are service failed. This is not an encampment where we want to be like this big communal space and we want to stay there forever. These are folks who've been chased all across the city. There's nowhere to go. They want housing. They want to be in apartments. Most of them have been housed, of course. You know, they want to get off the streets. But there's just no housing available, or there's no services. offices out there, and then bring people so that we can have meetings. And I want to say also that we've already deployed CopWatch and Berkeley Mead, the Needle Exchange, have worked closely together to come out, and we have our own Needle Exchange program that's privately funded by Berkeley Needle Exchange, and also Where Do We Go Berkeley is going to contribute. A few days before Christmas, everyone came out, and we picked up needles at all the encampments. So amazing, you know, that we went out and we did this, and we're doing this within these encampments, and there's no, you know, targeting of people, or we're looking at holistic harm reduction for the community, for everyone.
Andrea, in Santa Cruz, we have essentially a very activist right-wing group, a number of groups actually, that are challenging the Harm Reduction Coalition's attempt to set up secondary needle exchange, that has essentially thrown needle exchange out of the city of Santa Cruz to the very edge into the county area and reduced it to a non best practices, strict one-to-one exchange process, as well as, of course, a complete, will have nothing to do with, injection and inhalation centers, such as are being set up in places like Vancouver and in Europe, and I guess considered in San Francisco, although all, I guess, blocked so far or delayed. Are you getting any pushback from the reactionary folks in the Berkeley area who are, I'm told that Berkeley is becoming more and more gentrified, and it's becoming harder and harder for people to find, even decent or even indecent rental housing?
I haven't seen any public pushback outside of what people post on Nextdoor, but what they post is that they've seen, you know, needles around, and we're picking them up, and we're doing a needle exchange. So no one has really come out against me or against our encampments. You know, they talk about things like trash and whatnot. And I see a lot of the discussion is really because of lack of knowledge. There, a lot of folks, you know, want to talk about what's happening in these encampments without knowing, you know, that a lot of the stuff out there is from illegal dumping or whatnot. Yes, we have drug use, but let's bring meetings out there. Let's have holistic harm reduction. I would put Sharps boxes on the trees all over so that no one is targeted. If you're a diabetic or if you've used needles or you find one, you know, some folks, like even Caltrans, really appreciated the fact that we're going out there. Berkeley Mead is going out there, and we're picking up needles. Those needles have been there for many, many years. It's not to say that just they've been, you know, we have trash all over that needs to be picked up. And so we really haven't faced, people I think are understanding the reality. And what I always tell them is, you know, that's somebody's daughter or family member. Let's help them where they are right now, and let's look at it holistically, whether that be handing out condoms or, you know, giving tests or, you know, and let's have it throughout the community so that...
Well, you are aware that at the federal and state level, you've got, Robert Marsbutt, who's Trump's homeless czar, and then again, at the state level, you've got Newsom's homeless czar that wants to move people into essentially compulsory shelters, as I understand it. That seems to be the way things are going. Is there much concern about this among the people around you?
Absolutely. I mean, they're quite, at the Supers and the IA, well, all of the encampments, I can't say. I had met the most current, clever, intelligent folks who pay attention to the news. I mean, they've hit me to news apps because they aren't paying attention to what Trump is saying. Like I said, most of these folks are service failed. They've been trying to get services. They've been run through the system, and they're definitely paying attention to what's going on. And so they have talked about the narrative that's occurring right now in the news, and they are very leery of outsiders who come in and, you know, who are handing, they pay attention to those things because they know that this is the environment we're living in right now.
Much connection with RV folks fighting for their rights or their space to be able to survive.
What is my connection?
Well, is there much connection between not just you, but the encampments you work with?
too, because they have a lot of RVs there, and they've moved a lot of them to create space for what they say is going to be a sanctioned RV encampment. We don't really know. Here in Berkeley, they were planning to have parking spaces for RVs. It's my understanding that that fell through, so that in the new year, that may be a fight that we're going to join in with the RV community. I've spoken with Amber and Jessica, who head the Berkeley RV community. They really have been quite vocal about their advocacy. And so we're fully supportive of them. Where Do We Go applies to all of us. That's how I see it. It's all inclusive of people who are on couches, people in vehicles, people in RVs. When it's time for them to fight, we'll be there to support them and be in solidarity with them, because it affects all of us. Many times what I've seen is that people will be evicted from their home. They'll end up sleeping in their car. They don't have any money. Their tags will get expired. They'll get their car towed or an RV towed, and then they're on the street in a tent, and they're in the encampment, or they're downtown. And so we're all connected. It's all relative. This crisis that we're in affects everyone.
How much of your time do you spend inside, let's say, overnight in encampments?
Well, right now, in the summertime, I would go. I spent a week there, and then I would, in terms of living there, I would go back and stay when Caltrans was coming. The difficulty for me with that is that, like for homeless folks is or unhoused, you don't have an address. And because I'm ordering tents and a lot of material, there are, and you know, I need my electronics charged to do this kind of advocacy work. I can't be out as much as I would like to be, sadly, because that's what I, you know, everyone knows I'm using my address to get, you know, sometimes 15, 20 tents delivered, or tarps, or hand warmers, or different materials, or I'm using, you know, the law offices and whatnot. So I definitely understand. Christmas Eve, I was given a priceless gift. I spent Christmas Eve at the Seabreeze encampment with the residents, because that's my family. And we had a beautiful Christmas Eve, and I sang, myself and Miss West were singing, and we were doing karaoke for like 2.5 hours. And someone came up and said, "Here's a wireless speaker fully charged. You can run that out." And Robert, you know that was a priceless gift, because to charge something is so hard, especially when there's no electricity around. The sea breeze is so isolated. And so that's why many times I can't be, as much as I want to be, those things that I have in my home, I don't take for granted, because we need them to fight. We need that. So I knew the value of that gift. I was given a fully charged wireless speaker so that we all could sing on Christmas Eve. And we ran it in, you know, we ran it out. And I said, "You don't want me to take it home and charge it?" And they said, "No." And that was a beautiful, priceless Christmas. That's all I needed on Christmas Eve. So that was a beautiful thing.
I know it isn't really happening here yet, but there are some individuals privately. There's one, Brent Adams, who's essentially a video journalist and an activist who's kind of tries to, he has a day and night storage service here where people can store their stuff. And I was going to ask you about the storage facilities for people. That's number one. Also, there's been, obviously, there's a concern about showers, which people can't get except when they crowd into the very limited, difficult, and often you get evicted from them, showers that are partially provided by some of the poverty pimp services, as I tend to call them. And also, there's the issue of laundry, where, you know, you get soaked, as you know, and your clothes begin to mold, and you got to throw your stuff away, or the police confiscate your stuff, and it goes God knows where, and it's gone, you got to get it replaced. Anything happening around those issues for folks in the encampments that you work with?
Well, I have to say that Lava May has been incredible based on the response that I've gotten from residents. A lot of folks will go and use the Lava May showers. I believe they come virtually twice a week. And I know that folks say it's a great experience. They feel like they're treated with dignity and respect. In terms of storage, I think Dorothy Day has storage. But really, at the encampment, there is no storage. You know, isolated. Folks have a lot of belongings, and the storage spaces are not large enough. So in terms of laundry, I'm so glad you bring that up. Nobody brings that up. It's horrible in the winter. I think that's why I wasn't at the city hall. I remember there was rain at that time, and someone's tent completely flooded. And as you note, all of their stuff got moldy. And that's the problem we have at Seabreeze, is that the dirt and the mud gets into the clothing. People have been kicked out of laundromats. They lose all their clothes. Things just become disposable. So, no, we haven't figured out any solutions for laundry. That's a serious issue, especially at the Seabreeze, because everything has that thick mud and dirt. And at Ashby-Shellmount, people have asked, over there at Ashby-Shellmount, the dirt is so bad, people are just asking, you know, can they have rubber boots or rain suits to sleep in? So that is an issue. We haven't quite gotten there yet. Right now we're just working on, you know, tents and toilets and garbage.
Well, you probably had this in Berkeley, too, that recently we've had two homeless death memorials, which, you know, the people just keep on dropping. And how's the death rate in the encampments that you're working with compared, let's say, to, I don't know, general population, compared to folks elsewhere? I mean, it's ridiculous. You probably don't have any stats like this, but do you have any sense of this?
Barbara Brust has been amazing. She runs Consider the Homeless, and she helps so much, and she keeps an ongoing list of who's passed away, and she's able to tell city leaders. I think we have more issues throughout the city, people who are alone. We haven't had any deaths, thank goodness, in the encampments outside of Jason Cleary and Jupiter Marley, who were killed by the Amtrak trains this summer during the Caltrans evictions. So we haven't seen that in the encampments, and we worked very hard this year. And it's so sad that I'm only in the encampments. I mean, throughout the city, Barbara Brust is out there when she serves soup, handing out clothes on Thursday and Sunday nights. She's handing out clothes. She's handing out things to keep people warm. The really vulnerable who are sleeping in the doorways, that's where we've seen more of the deaths, which are horrible. In the encampments, I've tried very hard. We have more communal groups, so trying to create our own warming stations with heaters and things like that.
You have in Santa Cruz a lot of reports of homeless on homeless theft, whether it's because it's drug-related, whether it's because it's people's property is taken by police and people got to get it replaced because they're desperate, whether people have no place to store it. There is a storage, as I said, a free storage service that's run by Brent Adams, who also does the Warming Center, which operates only a handful of days each winter. But his storage operates, it's called Day and Night Storage, every day and every night. You can leave your stuff there all day. You can come and get it later. He's doing this without any support, really, from the city or the county, based upon private grants, and he himself he doesn't like to call himself homeless, but he really is. He kind of goes from, he sometimes couch surfs, he sometimes sleeps in a vehicle. he and I are not always on the best of terms because he doesn't think activism is a good way to go in terms of protests against the city. He wants to draw in the broader middle class and, you know, be acceptable and that sort of thing, which is sort of like the difference between Booker T. Washington and W.E.B. Du Bois, if you're familiar with old black history. We're all struggling in our own way, or some of us aren't struggling, some of us are quite comfortable, but we still do these net radio shows like I do. Is there something that we haven't covered that you want to cover that we haven't gotten to, that, you know, you want to mention?
I think I just want to say that, you know, a lot of folks thought, you know, what's going on with Where Do We Go Berkeley? We were kind of quiet for a while. And the only reason was we were preparing for winter. We're still here. We're still fighting. We're organizing. The quality of life in the encampments has gotten better because we have better tents. Yes, we have all of those issues, drug use, theft, failure, but things are getting better, and we're trying to do things in a more innovative way, and I think you're going to see us the residents fighting for their rights in January. That's what we're getting ready for. We had to get prepared for the winter, and that was our focus, was to... We're really a grassroots movement made up of encampment residents. That's really where do we go, Berkeley. I'm the organizer, but it's made up of encampment residents who refuse to move. Two entire encampments. We may have four by January. We're getting more and more people moving to the Gilman Underpass and to Ashby Shell Mound. So you haven't heard the last of us yet, but we're fighting for everyone's rights who's unhoused. We are in solidarity with everyone, and I just want to let them know that if you didn't see us on Facebook or Twitter, it wasn't that we weren't supporting you. It's just that we live in... Ms. West has a song that she wrote, and it's called I Live in the Dirt.
You want to sing that for us?
I love her. That's who I was singing with, and it's true. Where we're living in the dirt, so when it rains, when it pours, when the winds come, we're by the bay. The winds are so bad. It's hard living, as you know, anywhere. And so we stand in solidarity with everyone, and we just appreciate all support. And keep an eye out for us in January when Caltrans comes. We're going to demand that the city, you know, find a lawful place. And if not, let us stay. Get a maintenance agreement, and let's get some services out there of this $22 million that the city is giving away. Let's get it to the people who desperately need it.
Any actual events coming up that are scheduled for particular dates that you want to mention?
Just a second. It's our understanding that the second week of January, Caltrans may post. And so that may mean evictions at all four encampments. And so just be on the lookout. We'll be on Twitter. We'll be on Facebook. Letting people know what we're going to be doing in preparation for that, whether that be rallies or marching. We're still talking as a group.
And that Facebook page is?
Just Where Do We Go Berkeley on Facebook, and you can go to Twitter at Where Do We Go Berk. If you do a search, you'll find us, and we'll have information out there.
And I guess I'll leave it there. Anything about the Landless Alliance, I guess, of folks who are, I guess they were meeting every week or every other week or every month, I'm not sure. Any reports from them?
I don't have any reports from them. I know Clark Sullivan is so dedicated, and Betsy Morris is always out there doing stuff. As I mentioned, I've been focused on the four encampments and Wood Street. And so I haven't been able to get involved in many other groups because I'm trying to represent about 100 people in terms of advocacy or more.
Well, I will. I'll refrain from criticizing you at this point.
Yeah, you know, you get called all the time. You never know what's going to happen. And so, but we're just trying to get, you know, the basics out, thoughts.
Well, listen, don't hang up. I'm going to take you off the net here for the moment and then get some phone connections so I may do a few more interviews. And if you need to reach me or if anybody listening to this wants to add any of this for a future show, the number to call here is 831-423-4833, which you called earlier today. So there.
Fantastic.
Don't go away.